Turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off.
Yep.
Turn it off. I've been waiting.
You saying that
I've been waiting
isn't going to make me.
All week to say that.
You said it yesterday.
I did say it yesterday. I said it just for you. Turn it off. Okay, first of all, this... Okay, my recording setup is terrible. It keeps changing the recording volume against my will. Keeps raising the record volume because it really wants me to peek into the red. I don't know why I hate it. Any case, technical issues. Turn it off! Turn it off.
Technical issues.
Turn It Off is a George C. Scott meme, as well as a famous scene from the George C. Scott movie he did right before this called Hardcore, in which a man goes searching for his missing daughter after having seen her in a pornographic movie. And in the scene where he's watching the pornographic movie featuring his daughter, he starts hiding his eyes and screaming, "Turn it off!" It's a movie about the porn industry. He eventually finds her and she's fine. And she's like, "I wasn't kidnapped. I chose this life because I got tired of being part of a conservative Calvinist family." In any case, what movie are we watching?
We should not talk about the politics of the porn industry because there's a lot to talk about there.
Instead, we're going to talk about the politics of the ghost industry.
Yeah.
Because what are we watching?
Unfortunately, we're going to be talking about ghosts and not fairies like I wanted to.
What are we watching?
The Changeling.
With?
Yep.
George C. Scott. Yeah. 1980s The Changeling by Peter Medak. So this is our second George C. Scott movie. We saw him in Dr. Strangelove. He cool. was the general who was wacky and crazy and who had to be tricked into filming his role wackily and crazily by being told the cameras weren't on.
Yep.
George C. Scott, famous film and stage actor and director. He died in 99. He was nominated for tons of awards. He won an Academy Award. Famously, he was the first person to ever reject the Academy Award. He refused to accept it because he said that the Academy Awards are a meat market and that acting is not a competition. Well-respected actor, famous for playing George Patton twice, once in the movie Patton, once in a TV movie about Patton's later years, and father of actor Campbell Scott, who would go on to play...
after the soup?
No, but Campbell is what the C in George C. Scott stands for. Campbell
What's
Scott.
What's his son's first name?
What?
It's his son's first name.
The son's first name is Campbell, but the C in George C. Scott is also Campbell. Like, he named his son after his middle name.
That's dumb. What's your middle name?
Corey, with a C, not Campbell. If I'd had a son, I'd have named him Corey. Just like George.
That'd be like if my mom named me Marie.
She could have. She could have. Big Catholic family.
I would not have fit that name.
Marie. You would have had a different life if you had been a Marie. I don't know why.
I would have had a different life if I'd been named Oz.
That's true. In any case, this movie is directed by Peter Medak, who directed a bunch of episodes of Fairy Tale Theater.
Okay.
Including the episode Pinocchio starring Pee-wee Herman, which isn't very good. This director... Peter Medak went on to direct, like, Zorro the Gay Blade, the TV movie pilot of Heart to Heart, some of the new Twilight Zone, Species 2, an episode of Masters of Horror, a couple episodes of Hannibal, an episode of Breaking Bad. Like, this movie did not make this guy's career like it probably should have, but, you know... Poor Peter Medak.
I mean, some people only really have one good story to tell.
You get a story to tell and you tell it. But you know this story, even though you haven't seen this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. How come you know this story?
Because we got into a conversation where I asked if we were going to be talking about fairies again. And you said, "I don't know. There is a movie called The Changeling on our list." Mm-hmm. So I looked it up and I was like, "Oh, there's no fairies."
But you did look up this actual story.
Yeah.
Like the actual ghost story.
The actual, no.
Oh, you didn't. You just looked up the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
what kind of person
would...
do you think I am?
Well, you like ghosts. You like ghosties.
That would involve, give me a second.
Give you a second for what?
Just give me a second.
Yes, this movie is based on a actual, I guess kind of an actual haunting case. There's not a whole lot of evidence.
Russell Hunter.
Yes.
In the late 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to Colorado to help his parents manage the Three Birches Lodge in Boulder.
Yeah.
He rented a home at address redacted because, well, I guess it's been torn down, so I can just say the
address.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist.
1739 East 13th Avenue.
Ooh.
Beginning on February 9th, he started experiencing strange paranormal stuff in the house. Banging, crashing. I would probably just assume someone had broken into my house at 6 a.m. Stopped as soon as his feet would touch the ground. This is all
I was going to say, don't read ahead too much because it'll give away the movie.
Basically, just a basic, don't read too much. I've read the entire plot of the movie.
Oh. Just basically a bunch of ghost stuff. We'll get into it later.
Stuff that you typically associate with stuff like the poltergeist and things like that.
Right, right. Now,
and then there's some spoilers that I won't go into.
We'll go into those in the next segment. Suffice it to say, there's no actual evidence that any of this stuff that he claimed happened. And also his investigations into the history of the area also are suspect. However, the history of the area itself is fascinating. We'll talk about it a little bit when we talk about the movie, but the DVD or the Blu-ray, sorry, God, what is this, 2001? The Blu-ray actually has an entire little documentary about the area that I watched a little bit of and found fascinating. However, I have yet to see this movie, so I'm excited because this is a classic, horror classic.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
We haven't had just a good old spooky ghost in a while.
I know. I can't wait to spook it up. Let's spook them all up.
We've had some aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Some murderers.
Murderers. A lot of murderers.
Yeah. I don't remember what the movie we watched before.
We have some witches.
Right.
We've had some musketeers. Twice.
We had a Frankenstein.
We've had a Frankenstein. I have to admit something to you. I'm still on my alien kick.
Fine. You should stop by tonight. I have your birthday gift.
Oh, you do? Oh, it was my birthday the other day. Fan of the show, Josh Humphrey, came and hung out with me. So that was something.
I was there too.
Yeah, I know you were there. I mean, I guess our listeners don't know that. however, this has gone on long enough. Are you ready to watch The Changeling?
I am. I might ask you to send me that documentary so I can watch it.
I probably will. But I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. Stop it. Willow, are you ready to discuss the scariest movie ever made?
The scariest movie of all time, 100%.
It is the scariest movie of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, we watched The Changeling from 1980, and from beginning to end, both of us were simply screaming. It was a sustained scream of terror. We were so frightened. We were clutching the seats. And when I looked, Willow was not on camera anymore. Willow was clinging to the ceiling.
Yep.
She had leapt straight into the air and grabbed the ceiling. She was so terrified by the scariest movie ever made, The Changeling. The scariest. So frightening is it that I kept throwing up just from terror. Absolute terror. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen. When I look into the face of death at the end of my life, I'll be like, I am not afraid, for I have seen...
In one week.
1980s The Changeling.
I think the audience understands now.
That this is the scariest movie ever made.
This is the scariest movie ever made.
Did you know that Martin Scorsese considers this one of the scariest movies of all time?
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Martin Scorsese is. Martin Scorsese, the director of Taxi Driver.
No idea what that is.
Never mind. The Martin Scorsese, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. also one of the filmmakers who won't stop saying how much he hates the Marvel movies. So whatever, he considers this one of the greatest scariest movies.
The Marvel movies aren't like highbrow cinema, whatever.
In any case, Marty Scorsese was terrified by this movie. Thoughts on The Changeling?
It's not scary.
This movie is not scary. This isn't a scary movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's great. It was a great movie. It's just not scary. It has horror elements in it, but it's not a scary movie.
It's a horror movie. It's just not a scary movie. I think even if I had watched this movie as a child when I was scared by everything, I would have been like, okay, I get what they're going for. I don't think it's scary. I wasn't.
I was jump scared once, and that was when I was in the middle of telling you a joke and the window exploded.
Yeah, there was a couple of like startling moments, but I wasn't like, oh no. And it could simply be that this movie has been copied a billion times since then.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like, even the atmosphere, I was like, it's spooky. It sets up a nice spooky atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, oh boy. I was expecting to be chilled to my bones. I think we've watched scarier movies than this.
Yes.
Like,
Alien.
Since, well, I mean, Alien, obviously, but like, just, I don't know, I can
see
like...
The Raven.
Okay, not The Raven. But like, even like the Haunting, I thought was scarier. Even like Kill Baby Kill.
Yeah. What was that movie? Deep Red.
Deep Red. Like, I think these movies are, like, those movies like had me unnerved and like jittery. Yeah. This movie, I was like, it's a good movie with some good acting and a neat story.
The movie reminded me too much of The Boy for me to really find it that scary.
Okay, everything reminds you of The Boy.
That's true.
This movie is a boy without a boy. It's a boyless boy. It's a boyless The Boy. It does have a The Boy in it, but The Boy, it's more supernatural than The Boy.
Yeah.
Spoilers for The Boy. It is not as supernatural as The Boy 2. More boy. Brahms The Boy 2 actually goes into full-on supernatural territory.
They should have called it More Boy.
More Boy. Pile on the boy, or just The Boys, like Aliens. but no, The Boys is actually a TV series now. In any case, The Changeling from 1980. We had hinted in the intro at a backstory to this movie. Do you want to fill us in a little bit on what the backstory of The Changeling is?
Yeah, sure. So if you haven't seen The Changeling, this is all going to be news to you.
Right. Except that the backstory is a little different.
Yeah. I mean, some of the details are a bit different. But,
and the order in which a few things happen, but yeah.
Yeah. Basically, a guy buys a house and he's like, oh, this is a great house. I'm going to play piano in it. So, you know, I almost said just like in The Boy, but no. and some weird stuff starts happening. And he's like, this is a haunted house. And he goes exploring. He finds a secret room with some children's stuff in it. And this is all, like, none of this is proven.
Right.
And he starts investigating. And, yeah, it turns out, like, there was a kid who lived in there. And the house history was so weird and, like, wacky. And they couldn't really figure out who the kid belonged to. But there was a family that the kid probably belonged to. And that's kind of where they left it.
That was the vaguest. That's the vaguest story you've ever told.
I mean, it was a pretty vague like backstory as well. There was some banging of pipes and like a ball.
So Russell Hunter, who's a playwright and a composer, yes, he leased this house in Colorado, in Denver, which is called the. It has a name. It is a house with a name. What is it called?
I don't remember. The Cheeseman House? House
it's
of Cheeseman
not the
Park?
It's not the Cheeseman House. It's on Cheeseman Park. The Cheeseman Park neighborhood. Which, not Chessman Park, as it is in the movie. The Cheeseman Park in Denver, Colorado. The Henry Treat Rogers House? Something like that. The movie The Changeling, the Blu-ray, has a special feature on it with Phil Goodstein, who is basically the local expert on the history of Denver and all the weirdness. He has like 50 books, and we watched that. And he basically says, like, no one even knows what this house looked like because it no longer stands. And there's like one photograph that everyone claims is the house, but it's probably a house like several blocks away. So he moves into this house. he gets a year lease and he starts hearing this thumping noise and he finds a secret. Yeah, he finds a secret stairwell that leads up to a secret attic. Mm-hmm. And this ball comes bouncing down the stairwell and disappears. And so yada, yada, yada. He does some research, finds out that there was a family that lives in the house in the early 1900s, that they had a boy who was very sick, but who stood to inherit a ton of money. But only if he lived to his 21st birthday, which I don't think makes mm-hmm. much sense. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because then he would just inherit the money and he'd already be an adult. So the parents wouldn't get the money anyway.
Yeah, but if you raise the kid right, like if you raise the kid like and you're happy about the kid's probably going to end up taking care of you.
I guess. So they figure their son's not going to live to his 21st birthday.
Well,
so
what isn't they do it is, just isn't it just the dad at this point?
Well, no, because like in the original story, like the ghost story, the one that Phil Goodstein relates, it's like he sort of keeps it. He's like, it's the parents in the original. It's like because mm-hmm. they go and they adopt a boy and bring him mm-hmm. home. And they keep the sick kid locked in the attic.
Yeah.
And the boy they raise as the sick kid. And then when the sick kid dies, or was he murdered, they bury him in an empty lot. And they let the other kid, like the adopted boy, take on the identity of the sick boy. And he ends up becoming a quote unquote, like prominent member of the, like, that's it. Like, because it's vague because he doesn't have any proof of any of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no proof that this happened. And that the boy in the attic is now haunting the house. And that's kind of like where it leaves off. Like, he's just like, yeah. And then eventually he has to move out because his lease is up.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're like, you're really making this hard to lease out to the next people, dude.
Right. So he says it was a seance. He says it was a seance and they found human remains in a gold medallion with the boy's name. But that's like not been proven. Like mm-hmm. none of that's been proven. Like if you find if any of this happens, there would be a paper trail.
Yep.
And he says a few days later. The ghostly activity increased and glass doors blew up in my face and severed an artery in my wrist. The inner walls over the head of my bed violently imploded.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone else is like, that, what? What? And then like while the building was being torn down, the bedroom wing collapsed and crushed to death the bulldozer operator. And everyone's mm-hmm. like, no, that didn't happen. Like that, there would be records of that if that yeah. happened. That didn't happen at all. And even Phil Goodstein points out in his book about it, he's like, none of this checks out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good yarn.
It is. It's a good story.
Yeah.
I don't believe in ghosts. Story.
Yeah.
I don't believe in ghosts. So, I mean, none of it was believable to me in the first place.
So this is one of those movies that was like the brainchild of a producer, Joel Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
Was his little child. He wanted to get this ghost story made into a movie, and so like he gets the money together for it. He gets the team together for it. He gets the directors together for it. He can't keep a director.
Yep.
Because they all keep quitting. So he ends up with Peter Madak, who up until this point had just been making like weird films, like sort of like countercultural films.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Hungarian director, did a lot of British stuff. And the movie he did before this was called The Odd Job with Graham Chapman of Monty Python fame. So weird movies, weird sense of humor, strange guy. And he gets brought on to do this movie, which he eagerly accepts. And how did it end up?
It was a good movie.
It was a good movie. Yeah. It's really hard for me to build a whole lot of enthusiasm for this movie because I was so like, I wouldn't say I was underwhelmed by it.
It's not what I was expecting.
Like, yeah. If anything, like it's the production of this movie that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Like, because they tried to film it. They tried to film it. I think in like, if not the actual house, then a house that was very much like the actual house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get there and they're like, this house is boring.
Yeah.
It's just a small house. It's like a small house.
Mm-hmm.
So they built the facade of this, like the entire facade you see of the house in the movie was constructed for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It cost them like $500,000. And that was like, to me, one of the most, like there's a whole like a short feature on the Blu-ray about creating, called Building the House of Horror. The art director, Ruben Fried, is like, yeah, so it's a big deal. Like, this, like one of the best things of my career was building the exterior of the house for this movie. It was a bang. We did a bang up job.
Mm-hmm.
They got like this one painter to make it look distressed and old. It was like one guy did all the painting for this. Because he was a perfectionist and a weirdo. And he would like stay up for like days on end painting the facade of this house and the interior of this house. Like, it's all like just plywood, but we made it look like old wood and tile and everything. It's like so when you watch this movie, you're seeing a work of art on screen.
Yeah.
It's just not a very scary work of art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice house.
Yeah, it looks amazing. It looks like a really cool place to live. It's just not a real place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything about this movie is interesting except for the movie.
Everything about I would say that's I found the plot interesting.
I mean, yeah.
I found it interesting.
The plot is not the movie. The plot is a ghost story.
Mm-hmm, it's a ghost story. It's a well, okay. So our stars.
I don't think it's fair to give the movie props for the plot when it is actually a quote historical rendition of what happened in the house.
More or less, they mix a few things up to keep it interesting. In fact, I think they mix some plot elements up, I think, to its detriment. There's a couple of things they changed from the original ghost story that I was like, why'd you change that? It was more interesting before. In any case, George C. Scott is our hero. He plays John Russell, who's based clearly on
Russell
Hunter. He's a composer, a famous composer. And
his family is brutally murdered.
His family, they're not murdered. They are run over by a car.
You're right. I'm sorry. It was negligent homicide.
Yes. They're playing in the snow on the side of the road, and a car goes out of control and clearly runs over them while our hero is in a phone booth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beginning of our movie. We get to see them like run over.
That was the scariest part of the movie.
It was what?
The scariest part of the movie.
It was pretty horrifying. George C. Yeah. Scott, known to be a pretty difficult actor to work with on his best days, Peter Madak was very nervous about working with him. But Scott ended up being apparently a wonderful artist. He was great. He showed up. He took his role very seriously. He put in the homework. He offered suggestions. He did a great job. So good for him. His wife, Trish Van Devere, appears in the movie as well as the female lead. So, yes. So, yeah, and she's great too. So his family dies. He, in New York, and he moves to Seattle, and he gets a room, or he rents out this mansion from the local historic society, to live in and compose in and kind of get away from the world. And no one has moved into this place in many a year.
Yep. And the woman who he rents it from rushes the process.
Yes. Suspiciously.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there is a local senator named Joseph Carmichael who
looks
around.
Like a senator.
And he is around. He is just, you keep that in mind. He's around. Interesting. His wife, who gets killed in the beginning, played by Jean Marsh, who is a well-respected actor. And many in our audience would know her from the movie Return to Oz, where she played Mombi, the woman who takes off her head, and Queen Bavmorda from the movie Willow, who you are not named after. You are not named after the movie Willow. But the movie Willow, Queen Bavmorda, and Return to Oz, Mombi, two major 80s parts that our audience may remember her from.
We all know that I'm named after Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You are named after Willow, who was a hostess at the restaurant where I used to work. That is,
I don't believe you, but okay.
Okay,
you can say
story.
That. You can say that, but the other name you had picked out for me if I was a boy was Oz.
It was unrelated. It was
untrue.
Unrelated. It was unrelated.
Untrue. Untrue.
The first
untrue.
Time I was ever aware of Willow as a name was the
we both
hostess
know.
At
we
Nora's,
both know.
And I said, that's a cool name. I've never
we
I'm
both
not familiar with it.
No, that I was named after the characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And that's
and
okay.
To solidify my point, you ran into that Willow years later in your life.
Okay.
You did.
You're still lying.
You were doing some volunteering at the Heart of the Beast Theater. And she was your person who was helping you out. And you came home or whatever, and you're like, I worked with someone named Willow. And I was like, that's interesting. I used to know someone named Willow. And through a description of her family, I discovered it was the same Willow.
We both know I was named after Buffy the Vampire
Synergy.
Slayer.
Synergy. Synergy. In any case.
We both know I was named after Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And that's okay, because I would be, I'm happy to be named after a witch. A lesbian witch.
So he moves into this house. And he starts hearing some bangs and booms, some loud bangs and the loudest booms. He sees a boy in a bathtub. He is upset by all of this.
He has no need to go upstairs ever again, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because a window smashes from upstairs. There's a window upstairs that smashes outward onto him as he's leaving. And he goes to investigate. And there's no, like, the window is not attached to any part of the house he can access.
Doesn't sever an artery. Unfortunately, that would have been really interesting.
It doesn't sever his artery. Would have been a different movie. He finds behind a bookshelf or a closet, inside a closet, a panel. As you said, not a very well-disguised panel.
No, you were the one arguing that it wasn't very well disguised. I was the one saying, I don't think anyone would ever look that closely at it.
It's not someone, whoever disguised this, like, doorway was like, well, just board it up a little bit. Just put a few boards over it. But
they,
if there's going
to
be a draft or anything,
the door.
If you go to put towels away in this closet, you're going to be like, wait,
well,
there's a hidden door in here.
The house was never meant to be lived in again. I think that was the point.
If the house was never meant to be lived in again, why board up the room?
Because they didn't want anyone to accidentally, like, discover, I don't know, because they were like, oh, shoot, we should board this up.
I was like, I thought it was going to end up being like in Deep Red, where you access this room and then there's a skeleton inside. There's a little boy skull or something. And instead, he just finds a dirty old wheelchair and a spelling book and a music box.
Yeah. And I called the music box thing with the music box. I'm very happy that I did. Remember, because he was playing a song and then we find the music box and the music box plays. And I was like, is that the same song? And you're like, no, I don't think so.
Oh, right.
The music box.
Right. Because he's a composer and he's composing a song and he starts composing a new piece that ends up being the music box song that he's never heard before. Synergy. So he discovers this. And this is where the stories diverge a bit, because in the original ghost story, he discovers that the family adopted a boy to replace their son and then kept the other son, the original son, locked in the attic until he died. In the movie, it becomes clear that the son was killed and then they went and adopted someone to replace him.
Yeah. I think it would have been spookier if they had just left the son up there.
Yeah. I thought that was like, yeah, you kept him trapped. Like, why else is he going to be in the attic?
Yeah.
Like, they have the attic room.
It would explain the banging better as well.
Well, the banging comes from, in the movie, the fact that the father drowns the boy in his bathtub in a very unsettling way.
Yeah.
He lifts the boy's legs up and that's it. And the boy, like, doesn't have the strength to straighten himself out or pick
up. But somehow has the strength to bang on the tub so loud that it echoes throughout the entire house.
I believe that he had the song Get It On, Bang a Gong, Get It On stuck in his head while he was dying. And that gave him the strength to bang on the side of the bathtub loudly enough. So yeah, so the father kills the boy by lifting his legs up and drowning him before they adopt another boy. And I'm like, what if they hadn't been able to find a new boy? But they adopt a new boy and then they send the new boy overseas.
I thought they adopted the new boy overseas.
I thought they adopted him locally and sent him overseas.
I thought they adopted him overseas and then we're like, and that's why they lied about, oh, we're sending our boy overseas. That's why we're going overseas too.
Well, I guess that makes sense enough. To me, it would have made more sense just to adopt a boy and lock the other boy in the attic. And then pretend the boy got... I don't know.
Is that why me and Mitzi can't go into the attic of our house, Dad?
The reason you and Mitzi cannot go into the attic of this house is because it is full of fluff and mice. And there's no way to stand up in it because it is just a crawl space.
And a boy, apparently.
Wouldn't it be fun if there was a boy in our attic?
No!
Just a creepy, dead boy.
I did used to tell ghost stories on the bus on the way to Bancroft. And I did tell a story about a ghost in our attic once.
And? Did you have trouble sleeping that night?
No, I didn't have trouble sleeping. I knew it was garbage, but the other people thought it was real, so...
So, he's doing the investigation into this house, and that involves a lot of looking at microfiche, and going to the library. It really, I couldn't quite follow how he put it all together. But let's talk about the seance with the metal cone.
I did, while we were watching, I did end up looking into what the metal cone was for.
Yes. So he brings in the Warrens, as you said.
Mm-hmm. The old Warrens.
Yes. Who, you know, the Warrens are old or were old. Yeah. They are young, lithe, and sexy in the movies, but they were an older middle-aged couple in real life.
Yeah.
Not sexy. If you look at the actual Ed Warren.
Ed and Lorraine.
If you look at Ed Warren, he did not look like he does in the movie. He looked just like some guy you'd see in a deli or, you know, like walking down the street. He was just some middle-aged guy. Not a lithe, sexy man with a healthy relationship physically with his beautiful wife. I mean, I guess Ed and Lorraine Warren could have had a good, healthy sexual relationship.
I don't want to talk about Ed and Lorraine Warren's sex life. Thank you.
The movies do. The movies want you to know that being a Catholic with a good, solid faith foundation makes you lithe and sexy, makes you want to touch one another, and makes you sexier than the balding, overweight skeptics that they encounter on their TV shows. That's my favorite part of the second Conjuring is when they go on a TV show and it's like, and our resident skeptic. And it is this guy with like an ill-fitting suit who can't sit up straight and like greasy hair. And then you see the Warrens, who are the most attractive couple on God's green earth. And I'm like, this movie stinks. I hate this so much. But I love it also.
I love all the Conjuring movies.
Because they are hot, the hottest garbage. Yep. And I was going to say, this movie, The Changeling, comes like hot on the heels. It's like the end of this era of ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this era of telling a ghost story is completely obliterated in 2 years by Poltergeist, which changes the nature of the haunted house movie forever. Makes it exciting and fun.
Maybe that's why we don't find this movie scary.
It could be. This movie is the end of the 1970s revival of, you know what, God and the devil. That's like, which is now what ghost stories are back at. Like now, like since the Warrens have become so popular again, it's all about like religion and the Catholic medallions. And Poltergeist undid that. Poltergeist was like, no, they're just freaky demons who want to steal your babies. And we dealt with that for a long time. But now we're back to like the religious aspect of it. And you got to have faith, the faith, the faith. And this movie comes kind of at the tail end of the first surge of that, which we don't see any religious people in this movie. But it is all about that Catholic medallion. But so tell me about the not sexy Warrens who come to their house.
I can't tell you a lot about them because, you know, there's not a lot to say about them. Basically, they do this sort of she finds the attic room away from the rest of the group and then goes downstairs. And they sit and she has a bunch of paper in front of her and she starts scribbling on the paper to write down what she or the ghost is saying to her.
Yes. And she automatic writing, it is called.
Yeah. And she gets possessed by the ghost and she starts talking. And then we learn the ghost's name.
Yes.
Yeah, and we learned the ghost died in the house. I can't remember the ghost's name, to be completely honest with you.
Oh my goodness. You don't remember the name of this beautiful ghost?
No, I Joseph. Have no idea. Joseph, right.
It says it on the poster. Suspiciously similar to the first name of the senator we mentioned earlier.
Oh, right, yeah. And we learned he died in the house, and he keeps saying, my father. And then they have the cone.
Tell us about the cone.
So there's a cone. It's a metal cone. And it is a genuine... I say genuine. It is a ghost hunting cone. Spirit trumpet, I think, is what it's called.
It is a ghost hunting cone. Now, if you're at all, and you are not, I know, but if our listeners are at all familiar with Parks and Rec, the TV series Parks and Rec, there is a moment where one of the main characters invents a board game called the Cones of Dunshire. And you play this game with giant cones. And that is literally what I thought of when we were watching this, because it is a giant metal cone of Dunshire in the middle of their table. And I was going to make a Cones of Dunshire joke when we were watching it, but you would not have gotten it. So no. I kept my mouth and lips firmly clamped shut. So
I watched a lot of bloopers from Parks and Rec because I think they're funny.
They are funny bloops. But
We don't get an explanation for the cone.
We don't. It is just smack in the middle of.
And I can only assume that means the ghost also doesn't get an explanation for the cone.
There is no cone-splanation for the poor ghost. It is just a metal cone that everyone has to look at and the audience has to look at.
Yep.
And while all this is going, and then it falls over.
Yep.
And we're like, well, the first, cone, no.
First, the cup gets thrown against the wall because they keep like asking these questions and the ghost is like, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? How do I answer this? There's just a giant metal cone in the middle.
So what is a ghost cone supposed to do again?
The ghost is supposed to pick it up and speak into it so it amplifies the voice.
Wait, the ghost is supposed to like hold it like a megaphone?
Yeah, basically.
That's the dumbest. That has never happened. That's never happened in a seance ever. No one has ever been like, oh, the cone got picked up. I guess here it comes. And it's like,
so anyway, I guess you could say that I was murdered.
No, that's not going to happen.
Either that or the ghost is supposed to like lean over and speak. I know the ghost is supposed to speak into
it. If the ghost is supposed to lean over and speak into it, why is it wide mouth down? That defeats the purpose of speaking into a cone.
I don't know. You are asking. I don't believe in ghosts. All of this is hilarious to me because I think it's garbage.
I think you got it wrong.
I'll Google it again.
No, wait. I'm looking at it now. I'm going to look it up. Spirit trumpets. I'm looking up the spirit trumpets.
Cincinnati ghost trumpet.
Okay, so the spirit trumpets I'm seeing are supposed to lay on their side.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I meant by speaking. Because they just put it up and down and.
But the one in the movie is just sitting on its end.
Yep.
The original trumpets were huge.
Yeah.
And then they managed this technology advanced enough they could build smaller cones.
I think that in Insidious they use a version of this because maybe it's not the ghost that's supposed to speak into it, but the person who the ghost is.
This is
possessing.
The dumbest thing I've ever seen. I hate this. There's a cone, there's a spirit trumpet in the Lilydale Museum in New York, and it's under glass, and there's like Ouija boards and stuff around it. I hate it. I don't like this. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Spirit trumpets.
They don't even use
it right in the movie. It's like someone heard about spirit trumpets, but it didn't occur to them to use it correctly.
Yep.
I'm sending you
an image.
They use it like
it's hilarious.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever. Okay, wait. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my. This is a man sitting in a chair. Okay, his arms are on the chair's arms. Someone is holding one hand. Someone is holding the other. He has the cone balanced on his feet, and then the small end of the cone is stuck in his mouth, and he's supporting the other end with his feet. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. You know what I hate? I hate seances so much. Seances are stupid. I'm coming right out and saying it, and this cone is proof. In fact, I'm posting this on my Facebook right now, and I'm writing, seances are stupid, and this stupid cone is proof. And no one's going to know what I'm talking about, but I'm going to post it right now. I'm posting it right now. Seances are stupid, and this stupid cone is proof. And you know what? I'm going to make this stupid cone my profile picture. I'm making this stupid cone my Facebook profile picture just because it is so stupid, and I hate it. Seances are stupid. The spiritualist movement is stupid.
Ghosts aren't real.
Ghosts aren't real. I'm saying this. I'm sorry to everyone who believes in ghosts. This is proof that ghosts aren't real. This picture, the fact that anyone thought that this cone could be used to channel a ghost is real. Okay. In any case, they use the cone incorrectly in this movie. It's just sitting on the. Maybe they were gonna use it later. I don't know. But the fact is, she's using automatic writing to talk to the ghost, but no one can hear. She's scribbling a bunch, but it doesn't mean anything. He gets an audio tape of the seance, and he manages to play it at a high enough volume that he can actually hear the boy speaking, like, through it. I presume through the cone, maybe?
No, the cone is after the writing, so the cone does nothing.
But the cone is basically yelling and talking about his medallion. It's talking about how he was...
The cone?
Or the boy, sorry. The boy is saying his name is Joseph. His father did something. He was... There's a medallion. Yada, yada, yada. He figures out that this family used to own a well. He thinks the boy may have been thrown into the well, like
this
in the movie.
This goes full Ring.
It goes full The Ring. But now there's a house over where the well used to be. So he gets he goes to the house. A woman's living there, but she says that in the middle of the night, her little girl gets up at the same time saying that there's a ghost of a boy trying to crawl out of her floor.
Which is terrifying.
Which is terrifying. It's the most terrifying thing said in the movie.
Never see it.
We see okay, so he gets permission because the little girl wakes up again in the middle of the night saying the ghost boy is there, the ghost boy. We see kind of what she sees, but it's just a boy.
Yeah.
He starts tearing up the floor. He finds the well. He goes down into the well, a la The Ring, finds, it's all just dirt down there, but he finds the skeleton.
Mm-hmm. And call the police.
Call the police because there's a boy skeleton underneath your house. Guess who's not going to go? Okay. Crashings, bangings, whatever. If you find a boy underneath if I found a boy in my basement, a boy bones underneath my house, I'm leaving. I'm like, crashings, bangings, a ball bouncing down the stairs. You know what?
Whatever.
Screw it. I paid a lot of money for this house. Moving sucks. But if I find boy bones, I'm done. I'm out. That's what's getting me to move. Even if there were no ghost.
Yeah.
Boy bones equal moving.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they call the police. And
the police are like, what happened? And he's like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Forget all about it. They're like, shouldn't you stay and talk to the police? He's like, I'll talk to him later. I'm like, if you show up at a place and you're like, I bet there's boy bones under here. And boy bones are found. You're sticking around. The cops aren't letting you go home anytime soon. The cops aren't letting you go home. The boy bones are found. But he's like, wait a minute. The boy mentioned a medallion. So he goes back down into the hole.
He breaks
the bone hole.
He breaks in. Let's be real.
He breaks. Yes. He breaks through the, that's how you know he's a real hero, is he breaks it back into the house.
He breaks back into the crime scene.
Yes. It's a crime scene at this point.
This is where I was like, this is a giallo film.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Breaks in, goes into the bone hole. He doesn't find the medallion.
The coolest shot in this movie is this moment, though, I have to say.
What happens?
Basically, they just film themselves putting the medallion into the hole, but they round it backwards, so it makes it look like the medallion's slowly coming out of the hole.
Yes.
And it's very cool. It works well.
It does. It's creepy, and it's that, like, we reverse the film, which is, like, the easiest thing you can do, but, like, because it looks creepy, it works.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the medallion. I thought, but honestly, I'm like, where can this boy go? He can go anywhere.
Because
we're across town at this point.
He went to the he went to the river.
Yes.
And pulled a ball out of it, and then went back home.
Right, because the ball in the movie is a physical ball.
Yeah.
It's not a ghost ball. It bounces down the stairs and he catches it and he takes it to the river and throws it in the river. And when he gets back home, the ball is back.
Yeah.
And it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's all about ghost holes and wet balls. Trumpets.
And basically, so this boy can go wherever he wants to.
Yes. The boy is free. The boy is loose, which in real life doesn't happen until after the story. But in any case, the juice is loose and he finds the medallion. He puts two and two together, figures out that this old senator Joseph Carmichael is the new boy, is the replacement boy, the purchased boy, the bought boy. And he goes to confront him with the medallion.
Yeah. And he's like, he goes to confront. This is the stupidest plan he's ever had in his entire life. I hate it so much.
What is his plan?
His plan is to go to the airport, charge onto the runway, and be like, look at this medallion! Take it!
He goes, the senator is getting on a plane, and he's like, stop! Senator! Look at this thing! I'm holding a thing! Look at it! And the senator's like, the hell's that? What's going on? There's like a man. Like, get on the plane, sir. Like, his security's like, sir, please get on the plane. There's a man running at you holding something in his hand. Look at the thing on the thing! I'm holding a thing in my hand! And he's like, oh, I don't know what's going on. Of course he doesn't. He's like, stop and look at the thing in your hand. So meanwhile, the cops come. This one cop, DeWitt.
Yeah.
DeWitt comes and is like, stop. You found a dead body. You ran at a senator screaming. What's going on? He was played by John Colicos. famous character actor. He was in Postman Always Rings Twice.
This is the single most confusing part of the entire movie to me. This whole part,
I get it. They're trying to make the movie more scarier. They're trying to make it a spookier movie. I will say this: the cop, played by John Colicos, appeared in the New York production of the play The Devils.
Cool.
Which would go on to become the movie The Devils. So there's our little connection right there. He comes in and he's like, do you know anything? What are you doing? And he's like, I don't know. And then the cop leaves. And what happens to the cop?
He gets killed.
How does he get killed?
His car flips over magically.
His car doesn't hit anything.
No. It just turns over.
It's more like, now the car is upside down.
Yep.
And you're dead. He's dead. He's killed. So that means that the ghost isn't only able, not just able to leave the house and go to the bottom of the well. The ghost is able to turn a car upside down. Yep. Now, we don't know what this ghost wants. It's a little boy ghost.
Mm-hmm.
We assume the boy ghost wants its story told or a mystery mm-hmm. solved. But at this point, the mystery is solved. We know what happened. But our hero, John Russell, isn't telling anybody except for his girlfriend, Claire Norman, played by Trish Vandeveer, who is George C. Scott's actual wife, as you said, much younger than George C. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
She's young and lovely. He is old and weathered. Mm-hmm. But they had a wonderful marriage. They loved each other very much. They had a long, successful marriage up until his death, at which point the marriage became not so happy because he was dead.
Yeah.
Trish Vandeveer, we should say she is throughout this movie, but she's just kind of, we'll get to it. This is the giallo part. But the car is turned upside down. And the cop is dead. And at this point, our hero is like, I'm going to go yell at the senator again. I'm going to go talk to the senator again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give him the medal, this medallion, and I'm going to give him the recording of the seance.
The senator calls him because DeWitt has been killed.
That's right.
Yeah.
He brings the medallion. He brings the only recording of the seance. And he's like, your father was a murderer. He murdered you. He murdered the real you. You're a fake boy. You're a changeling. You were brought in to replace the boy. And Joseph Carmichael is like, get out of my office. My father was an amazing man. He was a wonderful man. And he was wonderful and loving, and he loved me, and he was wonderful. Get out of my place. And so George C. Scott is like, my bad.
Here's all the evidence. Because he thinks he's being blackmailed.
Right. But he's not. He's like, here's all the evidence. Take it, burn it, do whatever you want with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now begins the spooky climax of the movie.
Which also makes no sense.
Claire is at the house. She thinks she hears George C. Scott yelling in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just lines from earlier in the movie. What do you want? What are you doing here? And mm-hmm. she hears it like from way up. To me, it's actually one of the creepier parts of the movie. Because we know that it's something recreating George C. Scott's voice.
Mm-hmm.
But she just hears him yelling. So she goes looking for him upstairs. She goes up to the attic. And what does she find?
The wheelchair.
The haunted wheelchair.
Rolls at her menacingly.
The wheelchair chases her through
somehow
the house.
Somehow gets down the stairs.
The wheelchair only comes up to her knees.
Yep.
This is a little wheelchair. It's a very small chair. It's very small. It is the scariest thing she's ever seen in her life.
Yeah, it makes her fly down the stairs, apparently. And
it chases her so hard that she rolls down the stairs. And then George C. Scott walks in the door and he's like, what the hell's going on? And he goes upstairs to yell at the ghost. And he falls over the railing.
Yeah. And then
why does he fall over the railing?
I missed it because I was
That's right.
Looking.
You looked down for 1 second and George C. Scott fell through the railing.
Yep.
And you were like, what happened? I'm like, he fell through the railing. He falls. And then somehow the house catches on fire.
And the senator walks up the stairs.
That's right. So the senator, meanwhile, is back at his office. He looks at the medallion that George C. Scott found, and he looks at his own medallion.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, no, they look the same. I guess my father's a murderer. Right?
Yep.
That's it.
Basically.
That's the leap of logic. He's like, oh, no. And then he astral projects into the house.
Yep.
George C. Scott's laying there. He sees the senator walk in, but like wearing his like bathrobe and stuff, like whatever.
Yeah, the house is on fire at this point, by the way.
Sees the senator walk in. He's like, "Senator, senator!" The senator walks up the stairs. The stairs collapse, and the senator is trapped upstairs. George C. Scott's like, "Turn it off! Turn it off!" Runs out of the house with Trish.
Mm-hmm.
The house bursts into flames.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the senator is also in his office looking at his father's portrait or at a picture and is like shaking, shimmying and shaking.
Mm-hmm. He's seeing what happened to the boy.
Right. The weird leg drowning.
Mm-hmm.
He has a heart attack, I guess.
Yeah.
George C. Scott and Trish Vandeveer rush to the senator's house,
mm-hmm.
and he's dead.
Yeah. Oh, and also important information for the criminal case about to be made against these two.
Yes.
George C. Scott has had his lease canceled, and she has been fired from the Historical Society.
Right. We totally left out that there's a woman who works at the Historical Society who's like mm-hmm. her boss. Who is shifty and weird and has been like making phone calls to the senator being like, mm-hmm. I kept them out of the house. Like, don't worry. They'll never
know. So we assumed that the senator knew what was going on, but then was like, wait, does he know what's going on?
Yeah. So to me especially, I was like, oh, the senator is like in on this. And mm-hmm. this woman has been helping keep people out of the house so they wouldn't learn the secret.
Yeah.
But
which would have made more sense.
That's not the case at all, because the senator is legitimately shocked
mm-hmm.
that this happened. Like, he has a heart attack. He's like, no.
The senator had known, the story would have made more sense, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because then the ghost wanting revenge makes sense.
Because this woman, played by the amazing Frances Highland, who we love, is clearly working to keep, like, no. She knows something, and then she never comes back into play.
Yeah.
She just gets George C. Scott out of the house. She closes ass. She closes out his lease. She fires the woman. And
which is entirely fair, in my opinion.
Right, because they are screwing things up.
Yeah. They're harassing a senator because of a seance. So, you know, that's fair.
And so you were saying that the legal case against them
mm-hmm.
Is just compounded and compounded and compounded.
Yeah.
The body gets taken out of the house. The next day, the house is burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ashes is the wheelchair. And then what happens at the end? The music box opens and the song begins to play again.
Which means the ghost is still there.
None of this makes any sense. Why did the boy burn down the house?
Why did the boy kill the senator?
Kill the senator.
Did the boy kill the senator?
The senator had no idea what was going on. He didn't need to be killed. Clearly the boy is still around, because he's still around.
Mm-hmm.
As our dear friend Phil Goodstein said mm-hmm. in the little documentary, in real life, the house was destroyed in the early 80s. They bulldozed it and turned it into a bunch of apartments. Mm-hmm. He says the apartments are now known to be haunted by a little boy with a ball, and that the area surrounding, he says, like, what happens to a ghost when it no longer has a place to haunt? Like, that's like a legit question he asks. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
And to me, a more interesting movie of The Changeling is about that.
Yes.
And the surrounding area, because mm-hmm. this whole area, Cheeseman Park and the surrounding area, as we know from historical documents, used to be a graveyard.
You know, a massive graveyard.
The graves were supposed to be moved, but the people hired to move it only moved the skulls or some arms.
I have the history pulled up right now.
What does it say?
It says that basically the guy who was hired to move the bodies was paid $1.90 for each coffin.
Uh-huh.
So for adult corpses, he started using kids' coffins
and
would just separate bodies and just put them in the children's coffins and make bank. But he got caught, mm-hmm. and then no one else was ever hired to move the rest of the bodies, so they're just still in the park.
Yeah, and you can, in the park, there are indentations, apparently,
mm-hmm.
where some of the graves have collapsed in on themselves.
The history behind the cemetery and the park is actually really fascinating.
to me, if you want to make a movie of this legend, the legend of this haunted house, whether or not you believe in ghosts, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in ghosts, but I love ghost movies and I get frightened by ghost movies. Mm-hmm. I can give myself over to suspension of disbelief. I like haunted house stories. I am an easily scared man. I am the man who, when he's at home alone, will hear a noise upstairs and freeze, and I'll hear a noise again, and I'll go, "What's happening up there?" As if a person or a demon or whatever will be like, "Oh, that sounds like a scary man. I don't want to deal with him."
I think we were recording an episode once and you heard a noise upstairs, or we're on a phone call and you freaked out.
Yes, I am easily scared. So I'm all for making another movie of this. But an interesting mm-hmm. story would delve into the haunted area of Cheeseman Park. Like the whole area is spooky and kind of tainted.
The land itself was actually taken illegally to be made into a graveyard. Because it didn't belong. Yeah, it was taken from Native Americans who actually the land actually belonged to.
Well, of course. I guess all of America, but you know.
Yep. Yeah.
Word on the street is this land don't belong to us.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. They took a lot of elements of this story and made mm-hmm. Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Like, this is the actual, you move the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies. Like, that's what happened in real life in Cheeseman mm-hmm. Park. Those bodies are still there. They did it with Poltergeist. And I think that's interesting. That's that's creepy. And
Poltergeist and, like, actually scared me when I watched it the first time.
And then you have this haunted house and it gets torn down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have
what happens to the ghosts.
But the changeling doesn't answer that. And the changeling mm-hmm. doesn't actually answer what this boy wanted. Like, he wants, because his story is told, his story is discovered, and nothing. And then he tries to kill a bunch of people, I guess.
Yep.
And if the ghost is that powerful,
just do it yourself.
What's going on? Like, what's the deal, ghost? Joseph, as the poster says, how did you die, Joseph? Did you die in this house? Why do you remain? Well, we never find out why he remains. I'm angry at this movie. This movie sets up a lot of story that it doesn't pay out.
Yeah. The most frustrating part of this entire movie to me was when he's in the house and the cop shows up and he tells the entire story. Because I was like, how did he, what are you talking about? I think you remember me saying, like, for like 5 minutes, what is going on?
Yes.
Because I never got an answer to that question. I still have no idea what was happening in that scene. What is happening?
So this movie was influenced a lot by The Haunting.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Medak has said that he wanted to work on The Haunting. He actually tried to get a job on The Haunting, and he didn't. So that's one of the reasons he was very eager to take this up. He wanted to do a haunted house movie. Mm-hmm. He was very excited about it. And again, we're criticizing this movie a lot. I do want to go on the record as saying this is a very well-made movie.
Yes, it's beautifully done. It's
beautifully performed, beautifully acted. I think our two leads, George C. Scott and Trish Van Devere, are charming, and they have a lot of great chemistry. Mm-hmm. This leads us to the, you said it out loud while we're watching it. You said, is this a giallo film?
Yeah.
And it kind of is.
I think it is.
And what's your evidence?
Well, just the fact that they're trying to solve a murder mystery, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, the two characters are doing that thing that giallo film characters do where they go investigate and they do all the stuff the cops are supposed to be doing, but the cops are useless and on the payroll of the senator, so they can't do anything.
Yeah.
And the sort of disenfranchisement of the two leads.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's homeless for the entire last, like, third of the movie.
Right. It's interesting because it does. He is literally a composer, just like in Deep Red.
Yeah.
He's a composer. He's an outsider who comes into the community. He's immediately under suspicion by the cops. Mm-hmm. He meets the young, pretty assistant who decides to throw in with him and solve this mystery. There is so much giallo in this, like, mm-hmm. except for the fact that it's completely supernatural and doesn't have a living murderer. But Deep Red was very similar in that regard.
Yeah.
You have the boarded up room, you have the psychic, you have the ghost crying out for vengeance. You have the burning house at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much to me, and obviously to you, of a piece with the Giallo films we've watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would go on record, I will go on record as saying this movie works better as an American Giallo than it does as a ghost movie.
Yeah. I think that I agree with that.
Just like we have said, some of the movies we've watched work better as fairy stories than they do as ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're scarier. It's scarier to watch Mama if you are looking as a transgression into the world of fairy than it does as a haunted house or a scary ghost movie. This movie works better as a Giallo film for me.
Yeah, because I had a lot of fun changing my frame of reference from horror movie to Giallo film.
Yeah,
because I think I enjoyed the ending of the movie a lot better.
Yes, it's when I was thinking of it as a ghost story, I was like, eh. But then I was like, ooh, but as a weird crime movie, I'm like, yeah. It's because then it doesn't have to make as much sense. It has that Italian horror thing going on, or it's like, I don't know, the house catches on fire. The end. But the
motives of people don't have to like really come to fruition.
Yep, and you have useless cops.
Mm-hmm. The cops make no sense in this movie. The only like cop that actually does his job is DeWitt, and he gets murdered. So that's pretty Giallo film, right?
That is pretty Giallo. So this movie comes out, and it gets pretty good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Decent reviews. Roger Ebert was like, basically he said what we said. He was like, great movie, very well made. It's just not that scary. That's kind of what all the reviewers were like. They're like, it's, you know, it's better than you would expect. It's, you know, not a masterpiece, but it's a decent film. But it got good reviews. The acting was praised, people liked it. I think it over, as most of our movies over the years, it got a better rep.
Now it's considered one of the scariest movies of all time.
Now it is considered one of the scariest movies of all time, which I think very strange. I have so many things open here. I'm trying to find the article that I was just looking at. Yes. So Peter Madak, who is still alive and has gone on, he went on to make a bunch of episodes of Fairy Tale Theater. Okay. He directed the pilot episode of Heart to Heart. He made Zorro the Gay Blade, which is about Zorro's gay brother, which sounds like a terrible idea and is, but it's actually a pretty entertaining movie because, you know, Zorro's a hero and his brother becomes a hero in the movie. Yeah, that's the only way I can recommend it. He did an episode of The Twilight Zone. He did the movie Romeo is Bleeding, which was modern noir. He did Pontiac Moon, which got a lot of bad reviews. He did this TV movie of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, starring Mandy Patinkin as The Hunchback of Notre Dame, that I saw when it premiered. I was so excited because it was Mandy Patinkin. It came out in 1997. It's a weird movie. Selma Hayek plays the Romani woman who befriends the hunchback. It's weird. You should see it. Everyone should see it. Mm-hmm. He directed the terrible sequel to Species called Species 2, which was like, what if Species, but it was a guy? Has a lot of sexy men doing men sex. Sorry.
Excuse me?
It's the most disgusting thing I've ever said. But because of that, he got offered an episode of Masters of Horror, The Washingtonians, to direct. So he is now considered a master of horror. And great. His latest thing that he's directed in 2018, he did a documentary about Peter Sellers called The Ghost of Peter Sellers, which was about a very specific period in Peter Sellers' life. So he's still working. He's still around. But his story is that he was in London at the BAFTA Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, he hears someone screaming at him.
Okay.
You are my mentor. You're my mentor. And he turns around and he's like, what are you talking about? And the man who's screaming at him says, your movie, The Changeling, is just a masterpiece. And it was Guillermo del Toro screaming at him at the BAFTA Awards about how much he loved The Changeling.
Okay, Guillermo del Toro.
And he says, it's just nice to hear that from fellow directors whose work I love and respect. And you know, he says in this, there's this whole article about how the movie has kind of like been built up over the years. He's like, I wanted to make a psychological horror movie. It was important that I make an atmospheric, creepy movie. I wanted to make The Haunting. I couldn't make The Haunting. He wanted his job as an assistant director on The Haunting, but he didn't get it. Mm-hmm. But he got to know Robert Wise, who directed it. And so he learned a few things from Robert Wise about shooting an atmospheric horror movie. And they shot most of the movie in Vancouver. They built the house as a set because he wanted complete control over the house. So the house was built like you could move rooms and walls up out of the way in like just a few seconds because everything was on wheels because they wanted to be able to move the camera into different places. So it was kind of like the set for Alien in that way, which was that it was a complete like house set built on a soundstage, a huge soundstage, a full house. So you could move all throughout the house, but then move the walls aside to get the camera to different places. And it was shot for not very much money. It definitely made back its budget. It wasn't a runaway success, but it made its budget back in box office and eventually in video sales. And then in 2018, they did a 4K restoration of it. Severin Films did, which is the one I own. And it's got commentary track by the director, and it's got the documentary that you and I watched about the history of Cheeseman Park. It's got a whole little documentary about the music, about the building of the set, about the locations used. It's got an interview with Mick Garris about it. It's got just a bunch of neat stuff. It's a neat documentaries laden Blu-ray that if you're interested in a wonderful transfer of the film, it's worth owning. And a lot of people like this movie. A whole lot of people like this movie.
I like this movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
It's a good
movie.
We
made a lot of fun of it, but really they brought that on themselves when they used the spirit trumpet. Because what the heck was that?
I do want to say that my post about the spirit trumpet has gotten three laughing faces. and my friend Charles said, also they'd stick your hands in a bowl of cold spaghetti and tell you that was Frankenstein's brains. So the spirit trumpet is stupid, and that's a stupid picture. And that is The Changeling. I want to apologize to our listeners who you and I tend to love a lot of movies. We just weren't, this wasn't the scariest movie ever made, in my opinion.
No.
But it's still a good movie.
Mm-hmm. It's not so, like the new Grudge movie. It's better than that.
It's better than the new Grudge. It is better than the new Grudge. If nothing else, please know that we think that. The music was by Rick Wilkins.
The music was good.
The music was great. I really enjoyed the music. He didn't do a lot of movies. But he did direct a bunch of Jackson 5 television specials. So I want to give him a shout out. It was interesting score. I really liked it. And the Blu-ray came with the soundtrack. So if you buy the Blu-ray, you'll get a copy of the soundtrack. The cinematography was done by John Coquillan, who is a beautiful looking film. What can I say? It's a beautiful looking film.
I recommend this movie. I know we poked a lot of fun at it, but we poke a lot of fun at every movie, except for Alien, which we just talked about very seriously.
And hey, check out George C. Scott's other movies. He's this kind of marked the end of his leading man roles. After this, he didn't get a lot of leading man roles. But he was in Firestarter in 1984. He played Ebenezer Scrooge. He was nominated for the Emmy for that. He played Mussolini on TV.
I made a joke about
what?
About the ghosts at the beginning of this movie. I made a joke saying, is he going to be visited by ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future? I didn't know he played Scrooge.
He played Scrooge. But 1990 would for me mark the pinnacle of his career, because he played Smoke in Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue. He played the villain in The Rescuers Down Under, and in a role that he was nominated for a Razzie for, but which is actually one of my favorite George C. Scott roles, he took over the role of Detective Kinderman in The Exorcist 3, which is a phenomenal movie. It's not perfect, but it's still a phenomenal horror film. And he took the role of Kinderman over from, I think, Lee J. Cobb, and just nails it. He does a great job in The Exorcist 3. So check it out. Check it out. Turn it off.
But also watch this movie, because it is very good.
And watch this movie. Buy it on
Blu-ray. It's just not that scary.
It's just not that scary. You won't be crying. You'll be thanking your lucky
stars. You might get
frustrated
because you're confused about what's happening in some of it, but just don't worry about it.
Well, speaking of The Exorcist, what is our next movie in this, The Ecstasy of Influence?
Is it The Poltergeist?
Is what does that have to do with The Exorcist?
That's because I thought I'd seen The Exorcist, and then it turned out I watched The Poltergeist.
No. What is our next?
I have no idea.
Our next movie is the first movie directed by the author of The Exorcist, William Peter Blatty, and is about the astronaut who Reagan tells you're going to die up there in The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Even though it's not really related to it. It is the movie, The Ninth Configuration, based on The Ninth Configuration by William Peter Blatty, also known as Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane.
That's a bad name.
A very, very bizarre novel. And I am curious as to how it becomes a movie. So, yeah, next week or next time, The Ninth Configuration. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Are there any flashbacks to the you're gonna die scene in it?
Nope. As far as I know, it has nothing to do with The Exorcist.
Sad.
So there you go. There you go. There you go.
I'm just going to imagine that the demon is doing all of the spooky stuff.
I don't even know if there is any spooky stuff in it.
Oh, well.
I don't even know if it's a horror movie. It's all the demon's fault. It's all the demon's fault. So,
it's all Pazuzu's fault.
I'm going to get a shirt that says, it's all Pazuzu's fault. Until then, I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.